Blog Talk Radio. And we have one of the music industry great with us tonight, Eddie Rodriguez. He's a recording label, executive. And we really appreciate him giving his time and energy to join the Truth to Power family tonight and tell us his experience with the recording industry, and especially with Tico, I don't know if I'm going to say his last name right, Prentez, the king of Latin music. So this is going to be very interesting. Let me pull up my co-host, Eric, and then we're going to pull our guests up. Eric, are you there?
Man, I'm in the building. I'm on fire over here, boy.
That was some good
How you doing?
Great. I'm excellent.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. I just want to make clear his name is Tito Puente.
Thank you.
Tito Puente.
Puente.
It's okay. It's all right.
Puente.
There.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Puente,
okay.
And Puente means bridge. That means bridge.
Okay. All right. All right. Excellent. Oh,
all right.
Okay.
I'm ready. Well,
here. We're going to put Eddie.
Welcome in,
everybody.
We're going
to put Eddie Rodriguez us. Thank you. Eddie Rodriguez, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Giving us your time.
Well, I'm glad that I have the opportunity. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm honored.
Yeah.
The work that you did in Detroit, and Eric has told me so much about you, and I see what you're doing with the blog, and you know, peace and blessings, my sister.
Thank you. Now, before we get into the king of Latin music, how did you get into the recording business, the music business?
Well, that's a long story, sister.
Just a little bit.
Well, you know, I was in the Bronx, and I used to be the president of the Veterans Association. It was during the Vietnam era, actually. And I didn't have to go to Vietnam, but everybody that was with me went, most of them went to Vietnam and made it back. And they were in college. And we had an organization to try to get benefits for the veterans, and I was a guy talking to the Dean of Academic Studies, the president of the college, so to speak, and trying to make things happen. So we wanted to do a fundraiser to raise funds for the organization, and we decided to do a concert. And so back in 1975, and the first concert with me as a producer, so to speak, and the colleagues together, everyone that contributed to this, was with a black Latino artist, orchestra leader, who was I was a big fan of, and he told about the event and the cause, and he said, "Hey, Eddie, count on me, I'll be there." And he came with his 21-piece orchestra. Machito. And Machito was famous for introducing the Afro-Cubans, Machito and Afro-Cubans, because all the members of his band were all Afro-Latinos, and they were black, basically black Latinos. And so that was, I had Machito, and then there was another group that was hot during that time called Tipica 73. And then I had a new group that was just coming up, which is called Conjunto Libre. So I was a guy who was involved with the budget and how to pay the artists and getting booking of the theater and the venue, et cetera. And the night of the event came, and I had to introduce, you know, the event, thanking everybody for being there, et cetera. That was the night that I knew that was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, be involved with the music industry. Yeah, that's how I started. By the time I got to the record label part of it, I had already been through or the Latin, you know, side with the tropical artists with Celia Cruz and Tito Puente and Eddie Palmieri and Dave Valentin and Hilton Ruiz and Mona Santa Maria and so many, Michelle Camilo and artists from Cuba, Pablo Torres and Tito and Bebo Valdez and Paquita de Rivera. You know, I was involved with some great artists at one point in my life because I started working for a record label in Los Angeles called the RMM label. That label is famous for, obviously, you know, having some of the best, all the top salsa talent of that time. Everyone, you know, the top tropical salsa singers and performers were assigned to that label. And I represented that label in Los Angeles. And so, you know, my job was, you know, to start the operation. So I started by myself. By the time I was, by the time I left, the owner, Ralph Mercado, rest in peace, he relocated me in New York. We had a staff of five people. And I had put a deal together to distribute RMM with Universal Music. And so he told me, come to New York. You know, we have promoted Mark Anthony and Tito Puente. You know, we had Celia Cruz. We have promoted a lot of Latin tropical artists that became hits, Tito Nieves, Tony Vega, especially Mark Anthony, you know, and La India. So, you know, that was my involvement with the record business and with the tropical Latin record business. Prior to that, I was involved with the Mexican record business and the Mexican home video business. So there's a distribution in the U.S. So by the time I got to the record business, I already knew about distribution. I already knew about promotions and marketing. And I felt very comfortable, and I loved the talent. So that's pretty much it. You know, I ended up in New York. I was in L.A. I was relocated in 95 to New York. The office was in Hulk's, the Soho District, and we had Mark Anthony, we had Tito Puente, we had La India, we had a lot of the great Jose Alberto Canario, so many great artists that we had, talent. The talent was incredible. And so I was with that company for a while, and then I was offered a job by a company in Paris, and that had more to do with the international music industry, dealing with performing rights organizations and other record labels, independent record labels around the world, mostly Latin America.
Okay.
And so, yes, you know, my passion is always, that's pretty much how I started.
That's how you started. Well, when did you meet Tito?
I met Tito Puente when I was an account, local retail accounts manager for the first 24-hour Spanish radio station in Northern California, in San Francisco, called KBRG. And they used to call me it gave me a handle because I was dealing with all the club promoters and the concert promoters. So they used to call me local retail sales manager, cash in advance, Eddie Rodriguez. You know, these guys would never know, you know. And, but that club, the Keystone Corner, was one of my accounts, and Tito Puente was performing there, and we were promoting it. And what we did was, obviously, I was there for the first performance, for all the performances. And when I met him, you know, backstage, I told him, I gave him my card. I said, hey, look, you're this way. You ever need anything, you know, let me know. I'm here. And he said, where are you from, man? I said, I'm Puerto Rican, from the Bronx. He said, from the Bronx. He said, I thought I recognized you. You were one of those junkies on the corner. And so we started to laugh so hard that moment. that from that moment on, you know, there was something special between me and Tito Puente.
Y'all made a connection. What was the music that was playing?
The music that was playing at that time?
That Tico was playing.
He was playing some Latin jazz, but he was playing some jazz standards, you know, John Coltrane, a lot of great stuff, you know, that to me, you know, I'm a jazz buff as well. So when I heard that for the first time, I'm talking about 1979, and, you know, when I heard that for the first time, I said, well, like, wow, you know. So Equinox, there's a few. I think I sent you a few of the compositions that he did arrangements in Latin jazz to get a little taste of what I heard at that time.
I can put one on right now. Did you want to add something, Eric, and we can listen? Eric, did you want to add something?
Right before you drop that Equinox, I want to say that first of all, good evening, Mr. Rodriguez. Good evening, sir. So glad you to be here with us tonight. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Yeah.
And no doubt. And you told me that these musical selections were Tito Puente. These were his picks. These are, you know, if he was here today, he would say, "Hey, Eddie, play these on the radio for me." Is that correct?
Well, if he were to play, if he would, obviously, Oye Como Va, always Mambo Gozón, one of his favorite. The other one was Take Five, was one of his favorites. Equinox, Obsession, you know, I mean, there were just so many that he used to do in his live show. And his, you know, he had a set list and, you know, they were the tunes that he wanted to perform live. So for the anniversary of the passing of Tito Puente, we'll get that set list and do a whole show on his set list. But for right now, I'm just
that would be great. I'm just
celebrate his he would have been 98 years old on April 20th, and he was born in 1923. He was born in the Roaring Twenties. You know, so he went through that depression thing in the 30s at all in New York City. And, you know, he had tragedies, you know, in his life, one of his siblings, you know. He went through a lot. Then he went into the Navy, and that's where he started, you know, he was already playing, you know, in the Navy, and he came out. And he told me after he got out of the Navy, he just started playing, and he just kept on playing different instruments, you know. Pianos, playing, you know, vibraphones, marimba, every kind of percussion instrument. But that timbales, you know, were his. That was his trademark. Yeah. So, and I one time I asked him about the timbales, and he told me, and most of the bands used to put the timbale player in the back. And so he wanted to do something to put the timbale player in the front. And that's why the timbales, the congas, and the bongos were always in the front. The other bands, they used to be like in the back or on the side. Mm-hmm. And then he would bring a singer, obviously, who would be on the front as well, with them. You know? And so it worked out well. He had a lot of singers as well, you know, La Lupe, Francisco Colón, Frankie Figueroa. He did a lot of music with Celia Cruz live, you know, conscious. You know, just wonderful, wonderful talent. And I think what I'd like to do is maybe play some of that kind of jazz influenced arrangements. So the jazz standards with Tito Puente arrangements.
What about
maybe Take Five. Equinox and Take Five.
And Take Five. Okay. Here it is.
All right.
Take Five.
Yes, yes. If you want to get in a zone, music will definitely take you there. Go ahead, Aaron.
Man, my
that
God.
That's me. I felt it, you know, so. And I'm pretty sure that just like in the opening of the show, he played Oye Como Va by Tito Puente. That was an original composition by Tito Puente, and it was made famous by Carlos Santana. And so there's a funny story about that. You know, during the his shows, people would tell him, play that Carlos Santana song. He said, the Carlos Santana song. He said, what Carlos Santana song? You know the Carlos Santana song. And he would have to play the Carlos Santana song, and, you know, he would be, like, not, you know, too happy. But then one day, he said, he went home and he looked in the mailbox, and he had a check, and it had a lot of zeros behind it. And he said, ever since that day, when they asked me to play the Santana song, I love to play the Santana song. and he would break into the Oye Como Va, okay? And so then on the other side of Tito Puente, because he was a jazz man, you know, he knew how to take a Dave Brubeck composition or a John Coltrane composition and arrange it for a Latin jazz or giving it a different spin, just like Carlos Santana did to Oye Como Va and made that famous. But he was so, you know, talented, he was so versatile, that he knew exactly when to move from the big band era, so to speak, the days of the 21-piece orchestras that weren't in demand anymore. So in the 70s, what he did was he created this small Latin jazz ensemble, and he took that Latin jazz ensemble all over the world. playing jazz standards that he had rearranged into Latin jazz. And people loved him everywhere. He's the most loved, I think, out of all the Latin performers that have lived. Celia Cruz was phenomenal, you know. And Tito Puente, they were like royalty. You know, these people used to treat people, their fans, they were so grateful to everyone that loved them that they loved them back. They didn't have an attitude.
Right.
There was no ego. There was no ego. Somebody wanted to take a photo and they could do it. You know, they would do it all the time, every single time. And you know what Tito Puente used to say when people used to, want to take a photo with him? Give me $5. Give me $5. and they people say, no, forget about it. If I collected $5 for all the photos that I've taken in my life, I'd have a lot of money.
Yes.
Everybody wanted to take a picture with Tito Puente.
Yeah.
That five.
We just heard
Take Five and Equinox. The reason I brought that up is because, you know, we end the year of the five, and we always talking about our spiritual connection that we're connecting all over the world. You know, we got our family out there in Hawaii and Ghana. And Colombia, Peru, you know, our usual connection.
Yeah.
I want to say big up to everybody out there. You know, we only wavelengths, you know. It's a beautiful connection. You know, that's why I want people to realize this is a spiritual connection. This is not planned. You know what I mean? He planned the music that we've been vibing on. I remember that night Robert Dykes dropped that Equinox. You know what I mean? John Coltrane. So
yeah,
that's why I pointed that out. You know, it's a beautiful, and not only that, it's a brother named Ray Fontroy right now. He's putting a call out every Sunday for people all over the world at 3 o'clock Eastern, no matter where you are in the world, to beat your drum. So this is just an extension of that. We're beating our drum tonight with the great, you know, timbale, you know, Tito Puente. So, you know, we're doing our part tonight. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
That was a lot. Thank you. And Mr. Eddie Rodriguez, can you tell us what happened when you moved from San Francisco to Los Angeles and you worked with Tito for an ABC network television series? Can you tell us about that?
Oh, that was an interesting project. I was working with a group of young men that we were all, music oriented and wanted to, you know, do things in the music industry that were relevant at that time. And I produced a show with an artist by the name of Ruben Blades. And he was signed to Elektra Records at the time. And so some folks that were producing the show for ABC showed up at the event and saw what was going on. They enjoyed themselves, and afterwards wanted to have a meeting with me to talk about, you know, possibly doing some things with them. And the things they were doing at that time was something that was unheard of. They had a Spanish music variety show, but the host was talking English. You know, he was not talking in Spanish. And ABC, the ABC network picked up the show for 10 episodes. And we used to air in New York, Miami, Houston, Chicago, LA, San Francisco, around the country. And, I joined that team. And one of the shows was with Tito Puente. And I can tell you today that those are the lost tapes of Tito Puente, because I never got this. No one knows where they are. But I can tell you what happened that day when he showed up at the Hollywood Palace in Hollywood and Vine in Hollywood to perform. Tito used to work so hard that they used to go from place to place and place to place. And that day they had flown in from Arizona. And you could tell everybody was super tired, on the stage. You know, they were just performing. But one way or another, Tito noticed that too. And all of a sudden, he got this group going, and it was incredible because, you see them one minute, and, they look like they're, just deadbeat tired. And then all of a sudden, the music starts, and they come, and they wake up.
They wake up. Yeah.
And it's not usually with the first number. Now you hear the second number, That's what they said. The second set is always better because the musicians get used to, being on stage. But boy, oh my God. And he was traveling with his Latin jazz ensemble. And so, by the way, the flautist on Oye Como Va in the beginning and the saxophonist that you heard on Take Five and the flautist the saxophonist that you've been hearing is a gentleman by the name of Mario Rivera. He passed. Rest in peace. He was a black Latino from the Dominican Republic. Talented saxophonist, tenor, alto, flautist. Constantly, what I remember of him, he was just constantly practicing. Everywhere he went on tour, wherever he went, you can hear him in his room. He's practicing, practicing, practicing. And when you hear him on these recordings, or you know,
I think back about, you know, is it his delivery is like his intensity, you know. So rest in peace, another that Tito Puente had by his side.
Okay. Wow. What about Tito manager? With him,
you know, from the way that the artist management passed from hand to hand was in the 50s. You know, I don't really have a recollection of his management back then, but I do know that he was involved with RCA Records, and I know he was involved with a gentleman by the name who used to be in the record business, Morris Levy, and they were, you know, producing records on RCA. In the 60s, a band leader, a Cuban American band leader, by the name of Jose Curbelo, became Tito Puente's official artist manager, booking him for shows and touring him, et cetera. And then Jose Curbelo decided to move from New York to Miami, and Tito lived in New York. So the management from Jose Curbelo went to a gentleman, rest in peace, who's probably one of the greatest Latin music, tropical music promoters that ever lived. His name was Ralph Mercado. So Ralph Mercado became Tito's manager, and he was managing Celia Cruz, and he was managing some of the big, those are the big artists for him, Tito Puente and Celia Cruz. And he used to book a lot of talent, you know, tropical salsa talent. And then Ralph Mercado started his record label, RMM Records. And part of that was also a Latin jazz label called Tropi Jazz. Tropi Salsa was more young faces, you know, pretty faces singing, you know, songs and danceable songs and salsa like Mark Anthony does. And, you know, Mark Anthony was signed to the label at the time. But Tito was doing something more on the jazz side. So they started a label called Tropi Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So since Ralph was so busy with these artists that were generating a lot of sales, he didn't have a lot of time for Tito. And there was a gentleman by the name of Jack Hook, who came from the Dick Clark days, actually. And those Dick Clark tours in the South, he used to do the Dick Clark tours. And Ralph was able to get him out, you know, bring him in. He said, you know, he was retired, and so he brought him off retirement, and he started working with Tito Puente and booking him and doing, you know, being the liaison. Tito was the kind of, you know, artist that you had to talk to him every day, you know, wherever he was. And you had to send him faxes during that time of all the things he had to do, places he had to, that you signed, you know, to book him, things like that. And so Jack Hook, you know, handled Tito Puente for many years, and along with Ralph Mercado. And so Jack Hook passed away. He was 99, and Tito was in his 70s, you know, mid-70s. And so I called up Tito to, you know, express my condolences, you know, because I knew Jack. I had worked with Jack, and I knew Jack was his manager. And so with Ralph, was busy with the record label. So during the conversation, you know, Tito tells me, he said, you know, Eddie, I'm going to need someone at the office now. You know, I don't know what's going to happen there because Ralph is too busy with the record label, and now Jack is gone. I'm not going to have anybody, you know, to help me. And he said to me, I think he would do a good job. I said, Tito, those are some big shoes to fill there you're talking about. He said, "Nah, don't worry about it, Eddie. You can handle it. You know, you can do it. You know, I know you can do it. All you got, just get it cleared with Ralph, and get it, you know, signed. Get it, you know, put a deal together, and then, you know,
so that you could you can work with me. And then I asked him, so when do you want me to start? He said, right away. There were things to do, you know?
Okay.
And so that's what I did. I went to Rob Mercado. We put a deal member together. I was managing. I split the commission with Ralph, and I was very happy. I felt I had achieved a life dream, and that happened.
Mm. Yeah. What was that when you was the head of RMM Records?
Yeah, I was working for Trophy Jazz Records earlier. That's because I recorded a few albums with Tito. This didn't happen until 1999, where Jack Cook passed. But no, I was the head of Trophy Jazz Records. We had some great talent: Tito Puente, Eddie Palmieri, Michelle Camilo, Paquita de Rivera, Bebo Valdez, Giovanni Hidalgo, Dave Valentin, Hilton Lewis. A lot of these guys are gone. Some of them, you know, are gone. But I was the head of the label, and I was pushing the Latin jazz. And Latin jazz is not a popular genre in terms of sales. Okay, it's a popular genre as far as, like, you have to look at it like the jazz world. You know, you have jazz clubs, and you only have a few hundred people there. Or you have a jazz festival, you have tens of thousands of people there.
Right.
And Tito used to tell me that he used to record every year because he needed to have something new every year so he could send to the people that, you know, do the festivals. It doesn't get old, you know. And he had about 125 recordings to his credit, you know. And part of it was just, you know, making sure he had something out there for that audience that, you know, had supported him and that loved his music, you know, all over the world. So he was always on the road. There was one time he opened up his own travel agency.
He traveled so much.
He traveled so much. He got together with some people in New York, and they opened up a travel agency so he didn't have to. They could make the money from the travel that he was doing. He could be part of it, too.
Wow.
It was smart.
Because
he was traveling so much.
Yeah. And, you know, we have a jazz festival in Detroit every year. And I remember one year I went. I remember seeing him, but I didn't know nothing about him. And I was really impressed.
It wasn't him. Mm-hmm. You didn't see him. It was not him.
That wasn't him? Okay.
Nope, that was his son, because I knew some people from General Motors there. And
that was his son.
They knew I used to work with Tito Puente.
But
they didn't know that Tito Puente had passed in 2000. They're talking about a show. Ten years ago, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay.
No,
that's
the
son.
So what happened is his son became the representative of his dad, as any son should be. And, you know, he's been performing for the last 21 years and doing things. He's doing a movie now. God bless him. You know, I had other plans for myself. You know, I had worked with the best, and you know, his son, his direction was not the direction that I thought, you know, was one that I wanted to take. You know, I wanted to remain independent. He lived in Miami, you know, I'm here in the East Coast, you know. I was with his dad, you know. And so he's been very successful though. Very successful, that kid, with his dad's music and you know, performing all over the place. So, you know, God bless him. I'm so happy that Tito Puente's music is still out there. But it's different when you work with a man and you work with you know, even the orchestra that Tito Puente had, you know, can't compare with the orchestra that his son has. It's a good orchestra, you know, that's his orchestra. But can't compare with the talent of his dad. You know, these guys were, all I can tell you is use the word
phenomenal.
Musically, musically, they were monsters, is what I can say.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Tell us about the experience that you and Tico had with the mayor of Hollywood when he wanted a Hollywood star on that Walk of Fame.
That's an interesting one. I was with Tito Puente on a promotional tour. I think we were doing promoting the Golden Men of Latin Jazz at the time. And he had a few days off, and I was with him. We were, you know, he wanted to go to the, he always used to go to the church on Hollywood Boulevard and light a candle in the church. And after that, you know, we went to the Hollywood Boulevard, to the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And so we're walking, and, you know, Celia Cruz had a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And the way they got her a star was they had a campaign. All the Cuban, the Cuban community in Los Angeles had a campaign. They had a mail-in campaign. They just send them so many letters, you know. They have a star for mm-hmm. Celia Cruz that they ended up with a star for Celia Cruz. And so I took Tito mm-hmm. where that star was. And he said, man, Eddie, you know, he said, you know, I deserve a star like this too. I said, yeah, you do, Tito. He said, so how do you get a star? You know, I used to live in Hollywood, so I knew, you know, things about Hollywood.
Right.
I knew there was he's not a real mayor, you know, he's a, you know, the mayor of Hollywood, because of the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you got to go to his office and put, you know, the application, and you have to pay the funds for mm-hmm. maintaining the star, and there's a lot of other stuff. That's what I told
okay.
him. You know, it costs you about $5,000, you know, to maintain that star. You know, oh, there's no problem. I said, you know, he said, what else? You know, I said, no, we got a park for it right there in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, right? I mean, the mayor, they have Hollywood. He said, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
went to the Biltmore Hotel, and we were there. So
okay.
he was sitting down, and they gave me the application. So he's not going to fill it out, so I started filling it out for him. I knew a lot of information, his name, you know, his age, his address, you know, just basic things, and about the label he,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was trying to, et cetera. And then I had a few questions I had to ask him, you know, from the application. So I started asking him one question. He gives me an answer. And then I ask him another question, you know, about how many recordings, did he have a charity, what the other nonprofits that he was involved with, you know, things like that. And he stopped me. All of a sudden he stopped. He said, Eddie, I wish my grandmother were alive. And I just stopped right there, you know. I just kind of, I was writing, you know. I said to Petito, what made you think of that right now? He said, so she could tell everybody how great I am and I wouldn't have to do it myself. And if you think about a grandma, they brag about their grandkids. You know, he was so right,
that's
you know.
True.
And so,
yeah.
you know, that, he equated that moment, and I don't even know if he really had a relationship with his grandma or not. His son tells me he didn't, but at that moment, you know, that was what he thought would be witty or, you know, or funny. I think he should play some mm-hmm. music now. I mean, I think right around this time,
all right,
Tito
yeah.
was doing. Yeah, Tito was doing some more of the Latin jazz stuff. There's one song in particular that I'm very fond of. Kind of introduced me to Tito Puente in the '60s. But then it's the name of the title is Hong Kong Mambo. And then the other song is. Mambo Gozon. That was one of his favorites. G-O-Z-O-N, Mambo Gozon. And the other one is Hong Kong Mambo. Give it a little taste of his
okay.
Mambo taste.
Well, oh, okay. I don't know that I had that one. But we can play something else while I look for it.
Okay,
I got
play something
obsession.
Else.
I got
oh, yeah.
I got jazzing. I got wave.
Okay, but that's another. Jazzing and wave. After obsession, yeah, we can go. After that, we can go into the jazz and the wave. You know, that'd be nice because
okay.
It kind of segues.
Okay.
That's a Count Basie Orchestra. Jazz, a whole different
yeah,
topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we could do obsession. Now,
okay.
That'd be nice.
Okay, I'll play that.
Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Now that was on the album that what he did with Count Basie Orchestra.
Right. Yes, that was the first recording project that I had the honor to work with Tito Puente. That was a project, Tito Puente and the Count Basie Orchestra. And he wanted to have a female singer. I was managing that artist at the time. Her name is India. So I worked with the entire recording session for the vocals, because, you know, she is quite an artist. And Tito was very sensitive to her schedule and how he was going to get her into the studio and her, you know, doing, you know, her job, you know, on the recording. And, you know, he treated her like a princess, you know. It was incredible, you know.
Okay.
She came and would ask her, you know, if she's hungry or if she wanted to eat anything before she was recording. And she was just so, you know, and she went into this sound booth and knocked out some of these tunes in English. And she's basically, she grew up in New York. So she basically, you know, segued into Latin music and became a great artist in the Spanish language music industry. But yeah, you know, it was the first time that I got credits on an album, Jazzing, with Tito Puente. And, you know, the project before that, you know, the Obsession was like, you know, that was, wow, you know, that was another live recording. If you hear the audio recording, it sounds much different, but that was something that he played was really fast. It was, and just to show you that everybody kept up. was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right.
Just to finish off about the Hollywood Walk of Fame, he ended up getting his star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And then when he came back, you know, after he got it, he told me, man, you know, they put me in a spot, everybody's going to be stepping all over me. You know, because it was by the Man's Chinese Theater. And it was like, into, you know, the star was next to the driveway into the garage, you know. But he did finally, there was some people in Los Angeles that formed a committee. I wasn't on the committee. I just did my job, getting an application in. But it finally got it. I was there when he got the Hollywood Walk of Fame. We got the star and the celebration, and it was wonderful. Moving on to the Jazzin' project with the Count Basie Orchestra, that was his thinking. He wanted to do something with big band, you know, with a big band. And he wanted to bring in a young talent, and India was the one he chose. And she was scouting there. She didn't come from the jazz world, but she did her best, you know, the best she could. And Tito was very satisfied with that.
Wow. Now, do you remember what album that came?
Go ahead. Which one?
The Hong Kong. Do you remember what album?
Hong Kong Mambo.
No, I was talking about.
The Hong Kong Kong Mambo came from, it had to be a Mambo song. I can't recall the album right now, but it came out in
60. He has a bunch of them.
Huh?
Okay. No, I say he has a lot of albums.
Oh, yeah, he has a lot of albums. He recorded a lot. Eric, Ron had a question. Go ahead.
Eric, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you mute?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I'm vibing. Can y'all hear me?
So, Eric, you got any questions? And, you know, I mean, Beverly's been, you know, she's asked me some really wonderful questions, and I wanted to know if you had anything you wanted to know about.
Yeah, no, y'all. I'm loving. Y'all go ahead. I love y'all vibe. Y'all go right ahead. I'm later on in the show. I'm gonna ask you something that's off the grid concerning nature and you know the coquille frog, but that'll be later on.
Okay, I'm in Puerto Rico right now. It's a beautiful night. I'm on the Caribbean seaside of the island, and it's this beautiful weather here, and I'm blessed, you know. I'm blessed. I'm here with my 97-year-old mom, and it's just a blessing for me to be here with her, talk to you tonight, and be part of your program.
Yeah, and for those that want to talk to Mr. Eddie Rodriguez, legend, Nary recording label executive. You can call in at 323-642-1586 and push the number 1. That's 323-642-1586 and push 1. If you have questions or comments, let's go to area code 213-290. Area code 213.
Oh, I'm
That's
here.
Ronnie B.
213. Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Ronnie B.
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I'll make it brief since I am the first cousin of your guest, and I know other callers have more pertinent questions, but I just want to let you guys know that over the years, and I'm pushing almost 60, I'm a boomer. Eddie's older than I am. I know that for sure. But over those years, I got to, the extension of, his mother and my mother were sisters, and by that extension, I got all the benefits of it. You know, Eddie always was always. Quick to take, tell us when he was going to be in town, and always had tickets waiting for us. You know what I'm saying? So love you, brother.
Yeah.
I know you're listening.
thank you, Ron. Thank you. Thank you.
And by the way, I would be remiss to also say I've known Eric since we were kids. We grew up together.
Oh, okay. That's a long time. All right.
Love you too.
Family
affair. Love you guys, man. Do your thing. I'm loving the show. I'm listening. Praise God. I hope other people are calling in. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, well,
thank you.
Thanks, Cousin Ron. All right.
Let's go to 706-202. 706.
Hotep and better love, Bev, and thank you for the invite.
Hotep, Mommy.
Because I know you usually during the week. I didn't know, but this is a special occasion, and I'm most honored.
This is a special show, yes.
Right, and Tito Puente, that's the king of Latin. But the part that I'm looking at, and he's there on the island, and on the island of Puerto Rico, the thing that I was most honored with when I went there, I took my daughter got married in 2019, I think it was. We were there on the beach, and she got married in Puerto Rico. And it was fabulous to see, but there is a part of Puerto Rico outside of San Juan. There are Africans still living there in part of Puerto Rico, in the villages or towns. You know, it was after the hurricane had hit, but they were still there, and that's where the river runs into the ocean. And the part of that culture is the two cultures mixed, the captive Africans that were brought there and the Tino Indians that were there, and the music that they derive from them mixing the culture together still now to this day has this flavor of the African and the indigenous people of that island. So Eddie, if you know Tito, he he carried that in his music. You know, they call it like, but it's the indigenous and the mixture of the two cultures that's in the music and even in the dance and the celebration, and especially the dance and the women, and especially in the way that they have cultural dance that they do. So I was wondering if you could speak to that, because you're sitting there and honoring your 97-year-old mother, which is a very great honor, because I have mine who's 90. She's still living, and I'm 70. So we have that gift of knowing that time and that era, you know, that right now it's we're trying to keep it alive.
Well, thank you very much for calling in. The part of the island you're talking about is called Loíza. And interesting about the black Latino or the black Puerto Rican or the black Colombian or the black Central American or the black Dominican is that a lot of them have their traditional, they all identify with the African roots, you know. It's really interesting, especially in Cuba. I would think that they're the number one, you know.
Right.
And also in Colombia, and also in Panama. And there's just, you know, there were, you know, the way that the Taino Indians or the indigenous people of the island, and the Spaniards came after, you know, and just conquered the land and made them work, and they weren't used to work then, you know, and they had to dig mines, and they became, they went into the mountains, and there was nobody to work. So the slave trade became, you know, something that was happening at that time, and, you know, there's a lot of terrible stories about Christopher Columbus and all these guys that came through these islands. But the story is that the Tainos here in Puerto Rico, there were not any more Tainos around. They had all fled to the hills, and all the commerce was by the ocean, you know, the Caribbean Sea side or the Atlantic side. And so the slave trade, you know, reached Puerto Rico, and there's still parts of Puerto Rico, like Loíza, that are very much in tune to their African roots. They practice, you know, some African religious type of ceremonies they do, so honoring their African roots, you know. And so, and the music all has to do with drums, you see, because when the Spaniards came here, they came here with guitars and things like that, you know. And then they ended up here with horns, you know, then they had horns and things like that. But, you know, but the drum is the heart of Latin music. Can't deny that.
Right.
And everyone in Latin music is very much aware of if the African slaves had never gotten to Cuba or Puerto Rico, we wouldn't have the music that we had that evolved from that experience. And, you know, we can talk about black Latinos in music, and there's a lot of them that were never recognized who were geniuses, if they had God-given talent, but they didn't have the backing in terms of financing to market or promote them or record them. And back in the 40s and 50s, you know, they used to sign artists, and they used to give them a Cadillac, you know, give them an advance of $5,000, and that was it. And you know, the people that were recording them and signing them would keep all the rights, and a lot of these people ended up penniless. So there's another story about that. Eric and I are working on a series called Black Latinos in Music, where we are going to explore some of the first black Latinos that made it big in the U.S. Chano Pozo with Dizzy Gillespie, when he introduced Manteca which is, you know, that's a jazz stand. That was a standard of Dizzy Gillespie, and the composer of that was Chano Pozo, a black Cuban. He ended up being killed in New York at an early age. But in Cuba, his talent came from the streets, from those ceremonies, right, and performing on those, in those ceremonies and singing in an African language, not in Spanish. And
right.
So, you know, Puerto Rico and Cuba is a lot more than Puerto Rico. But, yes, definitely I am with you 100%. You know, without Africa, you know, we wouldn't have the Latin music we have today.
Right. And you spoke on the religion, and it was in the Vodou and many of the islands in the West Indies, mm-hmm, and especially the most of popular, besides for Nigeria, is Brazil. In the way that they took what you said, the Spanish came in, they took Vodou and they put it into Catholicism, and being able to keep that part of their culture and putting it into their religion, the Santa Maria and the others that they did, and taking the saints and made them the deities that was in Vodou. You know, the ocean, Yemaya and Oshun, and being able to make them into the Catholic deities, and being able to keep that worship. And then the most powerful part was that if you go there and you see them in a special ceremony, everyone wears white. Everyone wears white. And that's part of the culture that they implemented into the worship, while and keeping it in plain sight, but keeping that part of themselves alive.
Mm-hmm. Right, I agree. And it lives today. You know, in Puerto Rico we have bomba, and bomba is the traditional. You know, that's the closest that we have. Of an African dress and you know, beat, bomba, and you know, it's a every country has their own indigenous, you know,
but
beat, so to speak, from Africa.
Right, but the drum that you spoke about, because this is where the conga. We came with the djembe, but the Puerto Ricans came up with the conga, and playing the congas. It was another form of drum that they designed, but they used the djembe and they used the congas, and they implement one from the other.
Well, actually, the conga, you know, I would say is more attributed to Cuba, as far as, you know, the drum that we know today. I don't know if you remember,
right,
I Love Lucy. You know, the guy, you know, Desi Arnaz used to come out playing a drum like that. But that was Chano Pozo. Chano Pozo used to come out with playing a drum like just one drum. And back then, those drums were, you know, were skin over wood, and they were tacks that they had to keep them. They used tacks. And today they they're able to use a wrench to tighten the skin,
right,
to get a certain sound. Back then, they used to use a fire. You know, they used to put a coffee can. They used to, mm-hmm, put wood in there, and they used to use that and to tighten up the skin to play it. So the gentleman that came up with that invention to, you know, have a conga head that you can screw on and tighten it up, his name was Patato Valdez. And he was a Cuban. So, you know, Puerto Rico is indigenous for a guitar. It's called the cuatro, el cuatro. But in the towns that you're talking about, the drum has always been there. And
right,
the other part of Guyana was more troubadours, you know, just with guitars and things like that. So there's always been a mix here in Puerto Rico. The indigenous music of the Tainos, I've never really, I'm not a musicologist, or, you know, And there's a lot of people that know more about the, you know, religion of Santeria and all that stuff. I can tell you that Tito Puente, going back to Tito Puente, who we're talking about, he has brothers in that religion. He was very much aware that, you know, this was an African-based, you know, type of beliefs. And he was initiated into that, you know, after a trip from to Cuba. And so he was very spiritual, very, very spiritual, you know, very blessed, you know, and gave thanks all the time and very humble. And so
right.
that's what he learned from that, humility and right. and respect, you know, I mean, for all races, you know, because, you know, he didn't look at races, he looked at talent.
Right. Music is universal. And, you know, I thank you for doing this, and I thank Bev, because this show that you're recording right now is recording a history that a lot of people won't get from books, or people will write certain things, but they won't have the inside knowing of one who lived with him and worked with him. And so the thing of it is that we have to, as elders, we have to stop being these generational thieves and pass on and leave the messages and the stories. And I know that he said his 97-year-old mom there can tell the part when she was a child that how Puerto Rico was. And that's living history that needs to be recorded and remembered.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Kwame.
All right. Bye.
Thank us. All right. Yes. Okay. And, well, we're getting down on time, but we still have a little bit more time left. And tell us about your experience with the live recording of Tico 100 LP in Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow. That was incredible. You know, all of Tito Puente's friends showed up for that event, and I was actually working with the television series that I was talking to you about, Bravissimo, at the time. As a,
okay.
I was a line producer. I had to capture all the footage, all the interviews with all the artists that were there. You know how they felt about Tito Puente. So I'll tell me a story about Tito Puente. And everybody that we interviewed that night had a great story to tell about Tito Puente. And everybody, all those artists that were there, loved Tito Puente. And they were there to celebrate his 100th LP. An interesting thing happened that night. Because he was helping an artist. He was helping an artist by the name of Millie P. He helped a few female artists,
okay.
you know. One was Yolanda Duke. She did a great job for him. Frankie Figueroa was the last, he was the male artist, the last male vocalist for Tito Puente. He's still around, you know. Frankie Morales.
Mm-hmm.
Frankie Morales. And so, you know, he, for some reason or another, you know, Tito Puente had his 100th LP. He had planned for this singer to be there, and something happened between, you know, the singer. She started making some demands to the production people, and I was with Tito and the producer of the show, and told him, "Hey, look, this is what's going on." And he said, "Well, you know what? You know, he's gonna come." He said, "You know what? Just tell her to stay home."
Yeah, got on that
was
his
it.
Nerve.
That was it. Just tell her to stay home. It's okay. We're going to do the show without her. And it was a great show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody there, all the artists, and they were big artists and from the Latin music world, were there to celebrate Tito's 100th album. You know, so
wow.
He's been more out after that, so. It was a great night here in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. I got another caller here. 843-610. 843, you have a question or comment?
Better love, greetings, Sis Bev.
Better love, Eddie.
Greetings, E. Greetings, guest. Back in the day, there used to be this song about this guy named Joe, and it speaks to while he was drinking, he fell on his nose. Do you remember that song? They tell me that drunken Joe, while drinking, fell on his nose. His days are long and dreary, longer than others may think. He spends most of his time waiting for his next drink. You know that song?
That was Bobby Rodriguez y La Compañía. You can find him, you know, if you find Bobby Rodriguez y La Compañía. He was signed to Fania Records. I'm sure you could find that, you know, he was a clarinet player, Bobby Rodriguez. A wonderful guy, you know. He passed early as well, but he started with those. He did something else called Copacabana at the time, you know, and it was you know, New York, you know, Latino singers and singing in English, but to a Latin beat, and that was right after, you know, a lot of people had gotten used to the Boogaloo with Joe Cuba, and you know, Jimmy Savater singing in English with a Latin beat, Johnny Colon, Joe Batan. That was that era, you know, that kind of era. And Bobby Rodriguez, if I recall correctly, I think that that was one of his songs that I remember the lyrics that you're talking about.
Yeah, I used to love that song. There's quite a few songs. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't come to mind now. But the book that you speak on.
Did you ever get to see
Tito
Puente live?
No. Hey, who is, what is her name? Sheila E. Sheila E.'s father.
Sheila E.'s father. I used to live in Oakland, California. And Sheila E. is the daughter of Pete Escovedo.
Yeah,
lives in Oakland, and I knew them. I knew the family. They had a brother by the name of Coke Escovedo, who passed away, you know, in the 90s, I think. But Pete and Sheila, you know, Tito used to love them. They used to love Tito, and they did a few collaborations together. I was with them at the Wiltern Theater once when they performed together. And it was a really great performance. Pete is another, you know, Mexican-American who loved the percussion, you know, and his daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, his daughter used to play congas, and then she went to timbales. But I met her when she used to have an afro. She was a kid, teenager. And, you know, then she went with Prince and did her thing with that, and, you know, that was it. Sheila E. was born. And she stood around. God bless her.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to you. You said you're going to do a book about the Afro artists, you said, right?
Right. You know, we wanted to dedicate tonight to Tito Puente and his music because his birthday was the 20th. And, you know, so tonight was kind of just to talk about Tito. But we do have something planned. We're going to do a series, and we're going to highlight the music of Black Latinos in music. And we're going to talk about them, and we're going to talk about their stories, and we're going to do our research, and we're going to present these shows one at a time, and hopefully the audience will love them.
Definitely. Looking forward to it. And we need to celebrate all of our heritage because they're striving so much to eliminate and cause these things to disappear, and it's our responsibility, those who remember and know these things, to share this information, and I salute you and thank you for all that you do. Better love, Sis Bev. Eric, give me a call, man.
Better love. Thank you.
Better love, man. I love that. Better love. Better love to you, my brother.
Yes. Oh, well, we have about 12 minutes left, and I do have the song Hong Kong.
Mambo? Oh,
now,
good.
Are you, are you working on anything, or you have anything that you'd like people to know about, or you have any information you want to give out or anything like that?
Well, besides the Black Latinos in Music project with Eric, what I'm doing on the management side, on the music side, is I'm always interested in finding young talent. And about 4 years ago to a talent in the West Coast. Her name is Rubiana Fernandez, Mexican-American kid that has a R&B kind of feel to her at 12 years old, and at the age of 16, you know, the same person that told me about her called me up and said, Eddie, you know, I want you to see what we, you know, we can do with, you know, with her as far as, you know, getting her recorded and, you know, launching her artistic career. And I said, well, you know, let's do it. So what we did was I got in touch with some good friends. One of them is the producer of some of the recordings on the Santana album, Supernatural. Also, he was the producer of the legendary Selena, that gave her her sound and style, so to speak. He also produced, you know, he's worked with Michael Jackson on projects, you know, after the World Trade Center, that project they did, that Unity project with all the artists singing in Spanish.
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson.
Right.
And, you know, Celine Dion, Toni Braxton, boy, so many artists. He's a multi-Grammy award-winning record producer. Anyway. His name is Casey Porter. And so I took the project to Casey, and I said, Casey, what do you think? And then Casey, we did a Zoom call with the kid, with the girl and her mom. And he said, Eddie, you know, I think we have something here. And so we went ahead and started recording. So we have three singles recorded already, and by Casey Porter.
Mm-hmm.
He's the executive.
Okay.
And now we're doing the music videos. And so we're launching her in the Spanish market. You know, this is we're going to the Spanish market first, and then we're going into the general market because she's bilingual. Probably going to R&B, but she's doing Latin with that kind of singing and that R&B kind of like, you know, feel. And it's, you know, so her, you know, her name is Rubiana Fernandez. She's only 16 years old.
Okay.
And we hope this kid
help
make her family, her and her family. She's with a single mom, you know, five kids, and we're hoping to make her and her family financially independent, you know, because she has a great gift. And also the music video is going to be produced by a multi-Emmy award-winning, you know, cameraman, documentary filmmaker by the name of Jimmy Velarde. So we're surrounding her with a lot of great talent and
quality
management.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, you'll hear that name, Rubiana Fernandez, in a few years doing an English language project. Right now we're focused on the Latin market, Mexican American teenagers, so to speak. But about
Go ahead.
Yeah, just one word about Hong Kong Mambo, because I think you're going to end the show with Hong Kong Mambo.
Okay.
Hong Kong Mambo,
I first
heard Hong Kong Mambo when my brother and I had two best friends at the time were all on their way to Vietnam. Okay. And one of them didn't make it back, and my brother and my other best friend's brother made it back, but they ended up dying in the streets of New York City in a different type of battle. Before they left, or the night before they left to go to Vietnam, they played Hong Kong Mambo over
and over again, like they were never going to hear it again. And so I have, that was my first recording of Tito Puente, and I fell in love with the music of Tito Puente. He's mm-hmm. not on timbales. Have a singer. He's on vibraphones. He's playing the vibes. So that's my story about Han Camamo, my favorite Tito Puente recording of all time.
Oh, wow. Well, we're going to have to continue this because I still have more questions for you. We're running out of time now. Great music, and you have had and still have a great career, and we thank you for honoring us with your time and the information. Like the callers say, this is information that people need to know. And if you don't tell it, who's going to tell it?
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate you and what you're doing, Truth to Power. And Eric, thank you so very much for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope to do this sometime again really soon.
In the near future. Eric, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I see your line open. Okay. All right. Did you have some final words you wanted to say?
I wanted to ask about the Koki frog. I wanted to see if was they making a comeback yet from Hurricane Maria.
Oh, they are. They are. You know, I mentioned to Eric that I was here for Hurricane Maria. And, you know, we have an indigenous frog called El Koki. And so I live in a fishing town, population 25,000. And the Koki, you know, you would hear them all night long. Now you got to go into the mountains to hear Koki, because when the winds came, they blew away the Koki. And so the Kokis are coming back. Right now, you don't hear any. And usually at this time, you know, pre-Maria, you would hear a lot of Koki right around this time. You know, they used to sound beautiful talking all night long. But, they're making a comeback. I've been hearing them, and they're making a slow comeback, but I'm sure they will be back.
Already. Yes. Thank you, Beverly. Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Thank y'all for
thank
wonderful
you.
Evening. We will be doing this again for sure.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Eddie Rodriguez. We really appreciate you and the work that you have done and are doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Okay.
Bye.